As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to the Total Soccer Show. My name is Taylor Rockwell, and on today's Americans in Action episode, I'm joined by two friends to help me figure out which USMNT players need a move and who should stay put. Plus, we take a look back at the weekend's results for a few different Americans. Joining me today, all the way from Scotland, is a man who loves a plain white shirt with a tiny, tiny bit of decoration. It's Graham Ruthven. Hi, Graham.
Hi, Taylor. I presume that you're referencing the leaked USMNT kits for this winter's World Cup. Is that correct?
I think we'll find out in just a moment, because joining us is our man in Arizona, a guy who spilled dark blue paint onto slightly lighter blue paint and thought, why not wear that as a shirt at the World Cup? It's Joe Lowry. Hi, Joe.
Hi, everybody. So I went through and did a very short video on this for Backheeled. And I described the white jersey that was leaked yesterday from a couple of different accounts as, you know, almost all white with a few blue accents. And then I couldn't adequately describe the blue jersey in a short enough amount of time. So I just kind of gestured at it and said, whatever this is, it's blue and then also more blue, but also neither of the blues really fits to, guys, I don't get it. I do not get this.
They are undoubtedly weird. And the strange thing about them is, so Nike have got a template, not to be too nerdy about it, but Nike have got a template for this season, and the kind of neck details of the home shirt fits with that template. I think it's a little bit strange, but it kind of looks like a bat wing, like a Batman symbol below the neck. That's very much in keeping. Yeah, that's very much in keeping with what Nike have done this season. But then the swoosh logo on the sleeve is borrowing something from a PSG third kit from last year. And neither of those details I'm particularly keen on. So you mesh them together, and I'm not sure you get a classic USMNT kit. Certainly the home kit. The away one is slightly better. I think I would describe it, Joe, as like a tie-dye design, I think is what it kind of is, or like paint splodges.
By someone who's bad at tie-dyeing.
Slightly better, but not the biggest fan of that one either.
You don't tie-dye blue with another shade of blue. You tie-dye blue with like a bright red.
Yellow.
Or you could even go blue with other blues. Something has to be lighter on it, because otherwise, like, we live in a pandemic era. How many movies have begun with like close-ups of cells dividing and you're seeing the virus be born? Like, that looks like a petri dish is what it looks like to me. So I also think the center badge, I get what they're going for, but it ends up making it look like a training top. And I have training tops that look sort of like both of these. So it ends up seeming unfinished, which is maybe what it is, because the only other thing I will say, it does seem like a couple different images are slightly different. So I think we have the rough idea of what it would look like. I do know that kit providers will leak jerseys to certain areas or certain stores to see what gets posted, because then they can identify those kits and know who is leaking. But with that in mind, all of these seem to have the roughly same ideas with a few little different details to differentiate. So overall, I think this is probably something we will be getting.
The one to look out for is footyheadlines.com. When they have the leak, it's 100% legit. The fact that the swooshies were not on the shirt at all, the one that was leaked yesterday, threw me off because we haven't seen that on the Nike template. But then Phil Delves tweeted out a picture that showed them on the sleeves, and I thought, oh wait, actually no, that does seem like that could be legit. But Footy Headlines, that's the Fabrizio Romano of the kit world.
Pretty sure these are already at my local Ross for $19.
So. I mean, that is what they look like. And maybe they're just jumping ahead. Maybe they're lowering expectations that if the U.S. does poorly, then we would expect that like iteration of the World Cup jersey to be on sale pretty quickly. So if they put it on pre-sale, then they're going to do well, right? This logic is sound. I feel like I'm yes. not grasping yes. at straws at all.
Solid logic there. Joe, what was Weston McKennie's comment again on Instagram? I can't remember what
it was. He said something along the lines of, I tried to tell them, with like a face and hands emoji. Or I don't remember what the emoji was, but he commented on an Instagram post about this. And very clearly, the players are not really digging these jerseys. And fair play to them, because they're ugly. So that all checks out.
Everything I know about Weston McKennie tells me that absolutely happened.
Oh, yeah.
That he was given these and he looked at them and thought, like, this is it? Like, this is the training top, right? Like, come on. This isn't what you're sending us to World Cup in, is it? Like, I could absolutely see him giving it back a little bit. Because these are, especially the white one, like, I get there's always going to be a white jersey or a lighter jersey, but there's so much more you could do with that. And it just... it's a bit of a bummer. It's not quite what we were looking for. It reminds me of 2002, not 2022.
Well, that's the thing. I think Nike are going, this makes me feel old, because they're going retro with those designs. I think that's what they're trying to evoke, is the early 2000s, which, as I say, makes me feel very old that now counts as nostalgia. But the thing is about the USMNT shirts is, can we not just keep the current cycle of shirts? Because I like both of those ones, the ones that they wear, the home one with is it called the Futura logo? The Nike logo that has the Nike text in it, which is kind of retro in itself. I think the home kit right now is really clean. And then you've got the kind of slightly more adventurous away one. I don't know how you would describe it, but the red and blue, like, zigzags and stripes. I like that one as well. Can we just keep those?
Yeah. I think it is the nature of the beast that by the time you slowly get accustomed to the new kit and you sort of like appreciate the quirks and start to like it, that's when they change it again to something new. And then by the end of that cycle, you maybe have become more accustomed to it, and then they change it again. Or maybe you just actively hate it for this World Cup cycle, and then we'll see what happens next. Either way, we have a rough idea of what that jersey would look like. We should talk about a few of the people who could be filling out that jersey come the World Cup in Qatar. We are going to talk about who did what this past weekend. But the larger portion of this show is going to be focused on Americans who could use a move or should not take a move if offered. And I think a lot of this stems from our recent conversations about Christian Pulisic. Is that a fair summary of things, Joe Lowry?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's exactly right. A lot of this stemmed from the idea of me talking about putting players in bubble wrap and you guys adding carbonate to that whole mixture, which is beautiful. and also looking at the reality that players are going to want to move, right? The World Cup is not the end-all and be-all of their careers, but it is something to consider. And it is a meaningful event in this calendar year, in a couple of months now, that's going to come up and have a real impact on their next at least couple of years, depending on how things go. So, yeah, I mean, we're going to go through a few different Americans to look at whether they should go or stay, and I don't think we're going to agree on all of them either, which I think is okay.
We should, though, talk about like the idea of moving in general. Are we comfortable with players, broadly speaking, making a jump at this point? I mean, we would have all probably preferred they get a full preseason and everything like that. But with some of these players, does the timeline to the World Cup impact whether or not you think they need a move? Graham?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's on a case-by-case basis. So there'll be some players in our list that I think probably could do with a move, others that I think should stay put. And there's only 96 days until the start of the 2022 World Cup. It was 97 days until, oh, sorry, it would have been 97 days until last week when FIFA changed the start date. They've only had 12 years to plan for this tournament, but they've decided to change the start date of the tournament to a day earlier.
Graham, I thought you were going to say it would have been 97 days yesterday, and I was all ready to nod along with you. I'm all about that. Yep, that checks out.
Yeah, I made sure to get my wording there right. It would if we'd stuck with the original schedule, today would be 97 days, but it's actually 96 because they've changed the start date.
Boom.
But when you get this close to the start of a tournament, players often have a dilemma. And I know this year's tournament is in the winter, so it's slightly different with a summer transfer window coming before it. But you do get that same scenario in principle with the January transfer transfer window before a summer tournament. Should a player move this close to a World Cup? Is it worth the disruption when there's a tournament just around the corner? And I know there are differing opinions among us on this in principle, but I personally would take the risk of a potential injury between now and the start of the World Cup and have a player in form and match sharp for the start of the tournament, which is to say I would gamble on finding game time rather than sitting on a bench until it's time to get on a flight to Qatar. Because one of the benefits of this World Cup is that it comes in the middle of the season. There's only 7 days between the end of the first half of the European season and the first game of the World Cup this time. So in theory, you should have sharper players, at least for the start of the tournament. If you have players not getting game time in the first half of the season, you maybe lose out on that benefit. And maybe someone like Pulisic, who we're going to talk about a little bit later on, maybe he's in better shape by the time you get to the knockout rounds. Maybe he benefits from growing into the tournament. But that to me is just a hell of a risk. You need to look after your group games. First of all, you need to have everyone fit and sharp. But I do accept Joe's principle that, you know, injury is a risk and maybe you don't want players being run into the ground before a tournament. But I think somewhere in between those two extremes would probably be the best scenario for me.
Graham, I did a sort of Knives Out moment and only read the tweet of the headline about that story. Was it that Qatar realized, or the World Cup bid committee, hosting committee realized that they were not the first game, yeah, and so they had to change it?
Yeah, someone clearly at the, I forget the name of the official committee that organizes the Qatar World Cup, but they clearly hadn't looked at the schedule because the first game, I think, was Senegal-Netherlands?
Yeah, it was.
And there were three, it was due to start on a Monday, which in itself was weird because I've never known a World Cup to start on a Monday. It's normally a Friday and at the very least a weekend normally. So that was weird in itself. Then three games on the first day. They had Qatar, Ecuador as the first night game on the Monday, but not the first game. So it was all very strange. And I think I did actually highlight that in one of the previous podcasts or maybe one of the BR lives that we did. But someone in Qatar 2022 realized this and they've now changed the start date to the Sunday.
If ever there were a real-life Veep moment, it was that. Because I can absolutely picture Selena Meyer sort of teeth wide open, smiling, while definitely frowning with her eyes, saying, like, the host country has to play first. That's how it works.
Yeah.
And then they have to change the entire schedule. Yeah, they only had the 12 years, as you said, Graham. And you got to get that last minute.
And another Veep thing is all the Qatar marketing. So in the UK at the moment, a lot of the taxis, particularly in London, have Qatar 2022 branding on them, and they all have the wrong start date now on them. So that feels very Veep as well.
Oh, someone's going to be very, very mad about that scheduling change and how they didn't see it until they missed that opening game, though I don't know how many people in England are going to be desperate to watch Qatar. Hopefully they will be when we do our Soccer 101 episode about them this week. For now, let's talk Christian Pulisic, the origin of this conversation. Joe, I feel the need to kind of throw to you, but I feel like your perspective on Christian Pulisic has been established, but thus far this season, 25 minutes versus Everton, 5 minutes versus Spurs.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's a good indicator of what this season will be for him. He will get those substitute minutes. He'll play some cup games. He will start games if somebody is injured. But the front three seems to be Mount, Havertz, and Sterling. I can't really hate on that. They all do pretty good things pretty consistently. So it feels like we kind of know where he will be. And I think it's safe to assume that even if he is getting those sort of cameo appearances, still his spot on the plane is safe. Agree with all that, Joe?
No doubt. I mean, I'm really here for Christian Pulisic playing 5 minutes and 25 minutes off the bench for clubs, so we can go and do the exact same thing for the U.S. men's national team. You got Aaronson on one side, you got Weah or Reyna on the other. I mean, this thing just fits in quite well. I do think that it is better for Christian Pulisic, who has not proven he can stay healthy. I wrote about this a while back. I've talked about it over and over again. He has never in his career, certainly not in the last few years, established that he is capable of being an every game starter and staying healthy at the exact same time. There might be a fitness cost that you pay here. There might be a reality that because Pulisic's playing, you know, 15 minutes a game off the bench or 30 minutes a game off the bench and playing maybe starting every third week between cup competitions in the Premier League with a congested schedule for Chelsea, there could be a reality where that's not quite enough to keep him match fit. I don't really think I buy that. I'm guessing that when you have 30 minutes here, 30 minutes there, 90 minutes here, 90 minutes there, that's probably enough to get you in form. Plus, you have some time ramping up along with everyone else. It's a short amount of time, but you're going to have a week or so heading into the World Cup that does level everyone out at least a little bit. I think it's worth the trade-off to have a healthy, or the odds of Christian Pulisic being healthy go up when his minutes go down. And I think that trade-off, even with this fitness wild card tossed in there, I think that trade-off is worth it for him. I think it's worth it, or would have been worth it, for someone like Tyler Adams. He already made his move to Leeds, and so we're going to see how that goes for him in terms of his fitness. But Adams is then in that same category of players who have not proven they can stay healthy and play 2,000-plus minutes a season on a regular basis. We've just not seen that. And so I like the idea of Pulisic staying at Chelsea. In addition to the fact that, fellas, I don't know that there's a ton of really obvious quality destinations for him right now. Not only do I think it's better for him at the World Cup, and that is how I'm viewing this conversation, for him to stay at Chelsea and not be an every game starter, but I also don't think there's a lot of moves out there that make sense for him, right? You're looking at Everton? Is that really where we want Christian Pulisic to go? We're looking at Newcastle. I mean, I'm more intrigued by Newcastle as a project right now from a soccer standpoint than Everton. Maybe you're looking at a move to Italy, but just none of those moves really make me go, yes, that is the obvious place for Christian Pulisic to go. Set the World Cup aside. That's worth it for his career. I think in terms of a career standpoint, setting the World Cup aside, at least as a destination, Pulisic staying healthy, or the odds of him staying healthy go up when he doesn't play as much for Chelsea. He goes to the World Cup. Ideally for the U.S., he plays well there, and he's betting on himself to have a good tournament. And then he leverages that move to a club either in the winter or in next summer to a team that actually will elevate his career, or at the very least be more of a lateral move instead of going to a team like Everton. So I think in addition to the injury situation, the timing just isn't really right for Christian Pulisic to move right now.
In terms of his career, I've got no doubts right now. I've kind of made my mind up on Pulisic at Chelsea. And in terms of his career, looking beyond the World Cup, eliminating that from the discussion, I think he should be looking to leave Chelsea. I think Tuchel has made clear he envisages a front line without Pulisic. Tuchel is all about trust as a manager, and I don't think he has that trust in Pulisic. Not really, not in the same way that he trusts Havertz and Mount, certainly, and now you have Raheem Sterling in there as well. But I do accept that shaking the snow globe by making a transfer this close to the World Cup isn't ideal either, because you would want him to be settled somewhere by the time the tournament comes around, and there's absolutely no guarantee of that if you make a move. The rumour of Newcastle is an interesting one, and there are some things to like about that potential move. So Newcastle are an improving team. They play in a 4-3-3 shape, so obviously there's overlap there with the USMNT. However, the thing about that move is that Pulisic would be directly up against one of Newcastle's best players for a starting place, on that left side at least. So Alan Saint-Maximin plays on the left side for Newcastle. So you could feasibly end up in a situation where Pulisic goes to Newcastle on loan. I think he probably does start over Saint-Maximin, but there is a bit of competition for that place, and maybe he's not starting every game for Newcastle. I think what would happen is one of those two would get shifted out to the right side, but that's maybe not where you want him playing in relation to his position for the USMNT. So I accept with some of the moves that have been he's been linked with Newcastle. Let's not even talk about Everton, because he should stay miles away from Goodison Park at the moment. Roma have been linked with Pulisic, and I think that would be interesting in that Mourinho plays with a front three, but it's quite a narrow front three. He likes to have overlapping wing backs, so maybe he fits into that team. But I have doubts, not to trot out any cliches about Serie A, but I think it's fair to say Serie A is a slightly slower league than the Premier League, and I don't know if that suits Christian Pulisic, so maybe the Premier League or the Bundesliga is the leagues he should be looking to if he's making a move. So I accept all this is not ideal. If there was a perfect move for him, I would say make it, because I think back to that game. What game did he score the hat-trick in for the USMNT? Was that the Panama game in Orlando? And I think back to that game, and one of the conclusions we all drew from that game was what a difference an in-form Christian Pulisic makes for the US. And I thought ahead to the World Cup and thought, if you get that player, he could be the difference between not just getting out of the groups, but actually making a deep run in a World Cup. So that's the gamble with Pulisic. If you get him in that shape, he can make that amount of difference. But I agree with Joe that the moves that he's been linked with are not ideal.
A couple of follow-ups for the both of you. First off, dibs on Let's Not Even Talk About Everton as my new podcast name. We started an Everton fan cast.
That's good.
talking about if we can get that version of Christian Pulisic at the World Cup, Joe, I feel like you were kidding on the square when you talked about how, like, oh yeah, 10, 15 minutes, that lets him do 10 and 15 minute cameos for the U.S. Perfect. I also kind of feel like that was kidding on the square because it was joking, but also, is that serious? Is that where you sort of think he could have the best impact for the United States? Because with everyone else playing the minutes we would expect them to be playing and your concerns about his reliability, would you rather see him utilized as that sort of super sub?
It's too early to tell. I think that's something that we'll have more data on during the World Cup itself. If you've got Brendan Aaronson who comes out and just tears things up in the first game and Gio Reyna's healthy and fully fit and Tim Weah's out there, maybe Pulisic isn't a starter for this team. I'm not willing to rule out the fact that Pulisic might not be a starting option. I'm also not willing to rule him out as a starter. It just depends. And I do think it's an encouraging sign from Greg Berhalter that, think back to the June window, we saw him toss an extra attacker on the field. We saw Brendan Aaronson go out plus two other wingers. And so you have multiple different attacking options outside of, or you have at least one extra attacking option outside of the standard two winger setup in that 4-3-3 with three central midfielders. You drop a central midfielder and put Aaronson on in a hybrid kind of role where he presses as an eight but attacks in the right half space. And now there's another spot. So I do think with that tactical change, Pulisic's odds of starting goes up. But just with other talent in the pool, I think if Pulisic isn't starting by the time November rolls around, it could be a bad thing because he might just be in dreadful form. But it also could be a really great sign for this U.S. pool and how other attackers are performing for the U.S. men's national team.
Is there not also a scenario where Berhalter maybe looks at the opposition and adapts his attack depending on that? So, for instance, the England game, you would expect England to have most of the ball, and I would suggest maybe Pulisic is more suited to that game. But then the Iran game, maybe even the Wales game as well, the US would expect to the script's going to be flipped for those games, and maybe someone like a counter-presser like Aaronson's actually more valuable in that attack than someone like Pulisic. But the summary there is that the US have options, good options in this part of the pitch. And so it's not really, I think the ideal scenario is Pulisic is in form, he's sharp, and he is the US's best player at the World Cup. But it's not a total disaster if he's not that player, because as I say, the US have good options in that part of the pitch.
They do. I think I have a feeling that he is, if he's in the squad, he is a starter. Maybe that changes over the next few months if he's not starting for Chelsea and other players are starting for their respective clubs. But it seems to me like right now he is a starter, and so to have him only getting 5 and 10 minutes and then coming in and trying to play three full games in relatively short order, that would make me a little bit nervous. Graham, I have one more question for you about Pulisic that maybe will make me feel less nervous. So you were talking about maybe not fitting in with what Tuchel wants or not being the best fit right now, and maybe that's why he needs to be moved on. But if there isn't an ideal club for him, an obvious landing spot, then let's say he does stay at Chelsea, but let's say for hypothetical reasons, sorry England fans, Mason Mount gets hurt. What is the thing that you think Thomas Tuchel spends the most time working with Pulisic on to improve in his game? What is the thing that you think he most needs to work on to sort of elevate to that next level where he is more of a conversation for starting?
Well, when I think back to last season, and Pulisic was getting quite a bit of game time last season because Chelsea's attack was a bit of a work in progress. When I think back to some of the criticism that he was getting last season, it was that he was taking way too many touches of the ball. And actually, I know Pulisic is always a talking point for USMNT fans, but he became a big talking point over here in the UK as well. A lot of the analysis of Chelsea focused on him, and that was the thing that they highlighted, was he was just too ponderous on the ball, and Chelsea's move would slow down. And it was counterproductive for him, because obviously that's not making the most of his abilities. You want Pulisic making sharp, quick decisions and getting a pass away or a shot away or a cross away, doing things very quickly. And that's why I say a game like the England game might be better suited to him, because there'll be more space for him to work with in that match. So that's one of the things I think he needs to improve on. I think Tuchel with his current front line of Sterling, Havertz and Mount, he wants counter-pressing. He wants pressing from the front. And Pulisic isn't bad in that regard. He's certainly no Cristiano Ronaldo. He is capable of pressing from the front. I just think the intensity isn't always there in his counter-pressing in particular. So those are two areas that I think Tuchel would want to see more of from Pulisic. And he probably is you know, there are some players at Chelsea, like Ziyech, who's completely out of the picture, and you would expect him to leave by the end of the month. Pulisic isn't that far down the pecking order, so there is a scenario where someone does get injured and he does come back into the lineup. But at the moment, I think with the way Chelsea are going, it feels like they are building an attack without him. And for someone of Pulisic's talent, what did he cost again? £60 million or something like that. I think he probably wants to play for a team that builds something around him rather than being a peripheral figure as he is right now at Chelsea.
I genuinely cannot remember how much he cost. It was a big thing at the time. Now I feel like money is meaningless when you can just pull levers if you're Barcelona. All right, so where do we land then on Pulisic? It seems like Joe is comfortable with him staying there at least until the World Cup. Graham, it seems like you're sort of in between.
I am. I think it depends on the move that he gets. The funny thing is, I keep coming back to Liverpool being kind of the perfect team for Christian Pulisic, and there's that sliding doors moment where Liverpool were linked with Pulisic for so long. Obviously, there was the Dortmund connection with Klopp, and then Chelsea get him, and you just wonder how his career pans out over the last few, or how his career goes over the last few years if he signs for Liverpool instead of Chelsea. I suspect it maybe goes a little bit better. Not that his Chelsea career has gone has been a disaster, but it certainly feels like there's untapped potential there. So I say stay put unless you get a move to Liverpool, which seems unlikely at this point.
All right, I'm good with that one. Yeah, I'll amend it to stay put unless you get an offer for immediate playing time from an ideal situation. And it doesn't seem like there are many of those, but... And I'll stay away from Everton and Manchester United. Always good rules to live by. We will take one quick break. We will be back to talk about more Americans who could be on the move.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX, stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
We are back. We've talked about one American in the form of Christian Pulisic. Let's talk about another in the form of Sergiño Dest. Still with Barcelona for now, but has been on his way out the door for, I believe, the last 100 years or so. Basically, the day he signed with Barcelona, the next day, I think, he was being discussed as possibly being moved on.
He was getting told his salary was getting cut.
Yes, it was a state crime or something like that, I think, is how all the contracts work now. When in doubt, just blame the government and then rewrite the contracts. Enough shade thrown at Barcelona, Graham. But instead, let's talk about why Dest doesn't fit in with this current Barca team. Because when Xavi comes in, it felt like maybe things had turned. He gets frozen out, then he gets brought back in. I think injuries also playing a part. But it did seem like he was on the way back into Xavi's good graces. Now it seems like we're back where we began.
His place at Barcelona, Dest's place, has been very difficult to work out. It hasn't been clear. I still don't think it's very clear because, as you say, Taylor, at first it seemed like Xavi didn't fancy him. Dani Alves was playing a lot of those games over him. That's 38-year-old Dani Alves, who's now in Mexico, so that wasn't a great statement for Dest. Then he seemed to force his way back in, and Xavi spoke glowingly about him at points last season. And now it seems like he's back out of favour again. Ronald Araujo started at right back for Barcelona against Rayo Vallecano at the weekend. Dest wasn't even in the squad at all. And I've read that Sergio Roberto is ahead of him in the pecking order at right back as well. And when Xavi was asked exactly why Dest was in the stands for this game, because he's not injured at the moment, he never really explains much. He kind of closes it down. And he did that after this game. He basically said, quote, "It was a technical decision," which doesn't really tell you much about why he's been left at the team, but just tells you that he doesn't fancy Dest at the moment. I think if we're reading between the lines, I think Xavi has concerns about Dest's positional sense, or as he would see it, a lack thereof. I think he wants more from Dest in possession as well. Mm-hmm. So that was one of the big differences when Alves played last season, was when he started at right back, Barcelona used him as... how to describe it, like a hub for possession. That he saw loads of the ball. He would even drive into centre midfield with it. And the fact that Xavi now apparently sees Roberto as his first choice right back this season suggests that he still wants this quality from his right back, and Dest doesn't really give him that at the moment. I like Dest. I think he is a very good player. I'd be surprised if he leaves Barcelona, he drops down too much. Bayern Munich were interested with him. Manchester United have been linked with him. More on that later, I think. But there's no denying he's still relatively raw in some areas of his game. And unfortunately, those areas of the game are what Xavi is prioritising in that right back position at the moment.
And I think part of it also is Dest, his profile is get forward, be on the ball, do creative things. He's not a guy who you're necessarily going to funnel build-up through in a passing sense. He's very press-resistant because he can stay on the ball. He's not really going to turn it over because he's got such great close control. But he would rather dribble by you than pass through you. And Xavi's Barca team is so focused on building from deep areas. And then when they do establish possession higher up the field, where are the fullbacks? They're not streaming forward into the attack. They're not driving forward into the final third all the time, although that does happen sometimes. They're pinching in, right? They're sitting deeper. They're either alongside the center backs, or most often we're seeing kind of a 2-3-5 shape from Barcelona, where you have the right back, which was Ronald Araujo over the weekend, and then the left back pinching in a little bit and being options to circulate in possession and being options to recover the ball in the counter press. Ronald Araujo made, when I was watching that Barca game over the weekend in the first half, maybe he made one or two overlapping runs in the attacking half. He was staying home. Dest doesn't really do that stuff. And so I don't think that he really fits all that well into Xavi's profile for the right back spot, especially. I think that is at least part of the issue here as well. Or that's maybe the tactical look at why Dest isn't the perfect Xavi right back right now.
I think two things there for me. I think, you all, first of all, have done a great job of summarizing why he doesn't fit on the tactics side, on the player profile side. I would add, with all that said, he is also still an asset, and I think one of their most sellable assets at this point. And I wonder if that, Graham, is why maybe Xavi wasn't talking more specifically about it, is because the board had said, leave him out, we cannot risk him getting injured. Maybe I'm being too charitable there, but I could see a scenario in which they think, let's keep this guy on ice, people might still come in for him, I doubt we're going to get as much money for Sergio Roberto, so let's see what kind of sales Dest can generate. But I do think he does need to move. Contrasting him with Pulisic for a moment, Pulisic at Chelsea getting limited minutes, as we've already talked about, Dest may not even get that. But I also think Pulisic at Chelsea is at least in the squad, in the team, you know, is involved in training, isn't being frozen out. You're not hearing a ton of stories about him being dissatisfied with his role or Tuchel being really dissatisfied with him. You hear a little thing here and there, a little thing there, but I think for the most part, he is just a player who's playing for a team, albeit not as much as some of us would like. Whereas Dest, it seems like he is a player who is going to be frozen out. You have to imagine that will impact his confidence, and you need Dest fundamentally to be a confident player, because that's so much, Joe, as you said, what his game is about. So it sounds like all three of us are on the same page that Dest is maybe one who needs a move sooner rather than later, because we've got about 2 weeks left.
Yeah, I think he could do with a move. I'm not all that bothered about when it happens necessarily. I think if it happens in January, it's not like he's never going to play for Barcelona between now and the World Cup. He's not an ideal fit for what Xavi wants to do. But again, we look at the options that have been talked about with Sergiño Dest, and this is what maybe could sway me in this particular situation. What club that's being linked to Dest, or that Dest is being linked to right now, is a good fit for him, is a dramatically better fit than Barcelona? The one that keeps coming up as I was doing research is Manchester United. And Dest has familiarity with Ten Hag. I think he works really well as a right back in a 4-2-3-1. He can overlap. He'd be asked to do a lot of the stuff that I think made Dest so good back when he was playing for Ajax. But at the same time, Taylor, cover your ears, it's Manchester United, right? I mean, that's the reality right now is do you want to go to the other club that in the summer was just as dysfunctional, if not even more so, than the one that you're playing for right now? I honestly don't think that makes a lot of sense for Sergiño Dest. And so until a much clearer option comes into play, I'm really happy with Dest just hanging out at Barcelona.
Wait until deadline day if I'm Sergiño Dest with Manchester United. Because if you'd asked me before that Brighton game, should he be going to Manchester United, I would have said, yeah, I think that's probably a good move for all the reasons you mentioned, Joe, the fact they're looking for a right back of his profile. He would be first team there. He'd play pretty much every game. There's obviously the Ten Hag link and the Ajax link there as well. But you're right. Man United is just such a mess right now, a viper's nest, and they seem every player that goes there seems to be just dragged down. And I'm not entirely sure you want him to be in that environment. So that's why I say just leave it as long as possible to see if things do improve at Manchester United. They've got that Liverpool game on Monday. It seems likely that Man United might suffer a heavy defeat in that game, but you just never know. Maybe they pull something out there, they get maybe two or three good signings, and all of a sudden the atmosphere and the environment is a lot better, and at that point you think, okay, let's go to Manchester United. So I would say that's still probably his best option, because I don't really see any other links. Chelsea were obviously linked with Dest for a long time, pretty much a full year they seem to be interested, but it seems like they've shifted focus to signing a centre-back over a right-back, and I think that's probably the correct decision given how good Reece James is as a right wing-back. So a centre-back like someone like Wesley Fofana makes a bit more sense, I think, over another right-back. So it doesn't feel like Dest has a lot of options. Obviously, Bayern Munich, as you mentioned, Taylor, they had a long-term interest in Dest, but they've signed Mazraoui this summer, so they no longer need another right back. So similar to Pulisic, it kind of depends on what moves materialise. I would keep an open mind with Manchester United, although I accept everything that Joe says.
If nothing comes up that is not Manchester United, this just feels like such an obvious stay at Barcelona, stick it out, play cup games until the World Cup, and then leverage that. I know I kind of keep coming back to that theme, but this just feels like the perfect time. Move in January, right? Barcelona will sell you. They're willing to ride that market boost for you after you play for the United States at a World Cup, a team that's going to have a ton of press, a ton of buzz around them as likely the youngest team in that tournament. Just stay patient. This just feels like another really obvious one to me, unless something happens and there's an even more obvious move that materializes now. But again, Dest not really proven to stay healthy a ton, certainly in recent years. So I think staying at Barcelona, barring a really obvious no-brainer club coming in for him, makes sense to me.
I'm just concerned that he's not going to be able to pay his rent if he stays at Barcelona. I'd be getting a lawyer to check out that contract to see how watertight that is, given everything we've seen at the Camp Nou this summer.
I too am worried about whether or not he'll be able to make his rent. I think he probably will. Graham, I am shocked to say that I think you, for me at least, have hit the nail on the head. I think it's wait till deadline day, because I think I'm less comfortable with him staying at Barca if he is surplus to requirement, if he is just kind of sitting off to the side, if he's in the stands. I just see him going to U.S. camp being very down, lacking a ton of confidence. Maybe it's a breath of fresh air, but more likely to me is that he just doesn't have that swagger, that chemistry, that confidence that I think you would need from him to play the position the way Berhalter wants him to. And I also think waiting till the last minute is smart for the reasons you've laid out when it comes to Manchester United, that right now all the stories are about how terrible things are, about how toxic it is with Ronaldo there. He seems to be being the one that a lot of fingers are pointed at, and I'm fine with that. But if they were to move on Ronaldo, if they bring in a few more players, that it does seem like suddenly this is a squad that resembles more the group that Ten Hag wants to coach, is able to coach, that are capable of playing his style, then you do have Dest coming into a team that sort of, it's not built for him, but it has previously involved him in a certain way. And so I think it would then be a good move for him. It's also the type of move that I think with any other club would be seen as a very smart investment. If this were Liverpool going after Sergiño Dest because he's sort of available for cheaper than he should be because Barcelona have the financial issues they do, and you're bringing in a fullback who's played at the international level plenty, has played in the Champions League, can play at either fullback spot, can be a bit more attacking if you go in a back three potentially. I just think he gives so there's so much possibility and potential there that I think it could be a really smart move if a lot of other things happen at Manchester United. But I think there's other clubs as well who could use a player of his profile. And I think if that were to become a possibility, I'm good with it. But either way, I think make your decision on transfer deadline day, Serginho. I assume you're listening.
And he definitely is.
Yeah, of course he is. I think we've covered Serginho Dest plenty. Let's talk about one who I'm going to assume we are less comfortable with the idea of him moving on. Weston McKennie got 76 minutes for Juventus in their season opener, a 3-0 win over Sassuolo. Joe, Weston is another player. Oh, no, I've called him by his first name. Now I'm an American announcer. Let me go back to it. McKennie is a player who we, similarly to, Big Wes, we see similar to, like, Dest at Barca. Like, it seems like every time there's a big change, a big story at Juve, he ends up being one of the ones who's linked with a move away. But it never seems that strong. It's never a manager saying, yeah, we're happy with him to go, or he doesn't quite fit the system. It feels like, if anything, managers really enjoy having him there. So I'm going to go out on a limb and guess that you are more than pleased if Weston McKennie stays at Juve and keeps on starting.
I mean, it makes sense, right? I'm concerned about McKennie's injury history. He already picked up a shoulder injury in preseason, but he did recover in time to start their Serie A opener against Sassuolo yesterday, which didn't seem like it was going to happen. So that's a great thing for McKennie. But it just doesn't make sense for him to move right now. He's a starter for them. He started, like I just said, he was playing actually some as a number eight in that game, as one of dual eights in a 4-3-3 against Sassuolo. He also played some early on in the first maybe 20, 25 minutes. He was playing as a left-sided midfielder in a 4-4-2 with Angel Di Maria in a free role with Vlahovic up top. And then Allegri shifted things into more of a 4-3-3 with Cuadrado on one wing and Di Maria on the other. And we got to see McKennie as a de facto number eight in possession and defensively, which we haven't gotten to see a lot of in the past for Juve. And I really enjoyed getting to watch him do that job. He's a starter. I guess according to my principle, that means he should go, but that's just not realistic at this point. McKennie's going to stay at Juve barring some just ridiculous change of events.
Graham, are you on the same page both about how McKennie's being utilized, but also about him staying at Juve?
Yeah, of all the players that we've spoken about and the ones we will probably speak about after this, I think McKennie is the one I say stay put, because I don't exactly know how this season pans out for him as a whole. I don't know whether this is what you were saying, Joe, but do you think when everyone is fit and everyone is signed, because I think Juventus are also going to sign Leandro Paredes pretty soon, were you saying that you think he starts for them? Because I'm not entirely sure that he does when you have Locatelli, Pogba, Paredes, Zakaria. I know Di Maria is an attacker, but he can play in midfield as well. Where do you kind of see him fitting into that midfield? Because that's my concern, is that he gets squeezed out a little bit, Juventus.
I mean, he's going to play like 2,000 minutes, don't you think? He's going to be right in that spectrum. He's going to start every so often, maybe every game, every other game, something like that. Juve has enough games. There's going to be plenty of minutes to go around. They have a lot of quality in that central midfield group, as you say, Graham. But he started week one, and that to me says something. It doesn't say everything. But yeah. I would be shocked if McKennie, if he stays healthy, which is a giant asterisk, I'd be shocked if he doesn't reach at least 2,000 minutes this year.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Another thing is Max Allegri seems to be a big fan of his. I found countless quotes from Allegri on the qualities that he feels McKennie brings to Juventus. So I think even if he is knocked down the pecking order, he probably gets enough minutes. But I think even if that wasn't the case, I think right now there are just too many unanswered questions for him to draw any solid conclusions. I think the 4-4-2 shape that Allegri used against Sassuolo could mean that he's used a little bit more often than that left-sided role, which isn't ideal for the US, but isn't a disaster either if he's getting game time. And Pogba's already out for quite a while. So
no.
I think there's a... Yeah, you're shocking, I know. I think he's going to get enough game time this season. I do think there's a question maybe this time next year, given how this season pans out, and maybe he's not a key figure for Juventus in the second half of the season. But right now, stay put, I think, is the wise thing to do.
Of the three we've talked about so far, who do you expect to be in the best position this time next year, Graham?
Best position in terms of, what do you mean?
Of their career. Who do you think is playing like the most minutes for the biggest profile club,
Ooh,
the highest profile club, who is like at the highest point of their career at that point?
Oh, that's very difficult. I'll go with McKennie because I just think there's more. I can't really legislate for what sort of hypothetical moves Pulisic and Dest are going to make over the next year. So I think McKennie, in terms of where he is in his current club, is certainly in the best position. And he, as I said to Joe, he's going to get game time. So even if he wants to move on, there's probably going to be quite a good list of clubs that want him. I think Tottenham have a long-standing interest in him, so maybe that's maybe one to keep an eye out for next summer. So yeah, I'll go with McKennie.
I've only just realized that if Pulisic were to go on loan to Roma, he is then sort of following in the footsteps of Mohamed Salah. You go Chelsea, you go Roma, maybe Fiorentina was in there, and then you go to Liverpool. We get him there eventually, so I think it could all still work out. So if Pulisic goes that route real fast and ends up at Liverpool, maybe it's him. I do lean Weston McKennie of those three, but maybe Tim Weah, Joe Lowry could be in that conversation. Rumored interest from Valencia. We unite him with Yunus Musa, and I'm going to assume Valencia win La Liga in like March, maybe April.
I think even earlier, to be honest.
Okay.
When you combine Weah and Musa, just crazy things happen. I would love to see this move simply from a selfish, I watch all these players play every single week and mm-hmm. would love to watch two at the same time. In addition to all that, two of my favorite USMNT players, two of the players that I think are the most fun to watch. Musa, we talked about this before, is actually playing as a central midfielder under Gattuso, which is chaotic and explosive from a managerial standpoint, but is good for Musa right now. And then Weah would fit very, very well, I think, as one of the wingers in that 4-3-3 that Gattuso's rolling out for Valencia. So I like that idea. Weah's currently out with a foot injury, so he is another one of the U.S. players that is missing time every month, it certainly feels like at this point. You mentioned Valencia reportedly in for him. Weah played 1,800 minutes for Leo last year while missing more than 2 months of the season with injuries. So when he's healthy last year, when he was healthy last year, he was playing. He wasn't an every game starter. He wasn't the most important player for that Leo team. But I think he has more to give with Leo. The other interesting factor into all this is that they have a new manager, right? So you have Paulo Fonseca as Leo's new manager, which means they're going to be much more fun than they've been in the past. I know they won a title over the last few years, but they never actually played entertaining soccer or something that I would even equate to anything close to Greg Berhalter's U.S. men's national team, which is not always fun either, but at least they play a little bit more. Fonseca is going to play more. So I actually like the idea of Weah betting in at Leo, getting healthy, and finding his place in that squad. I also would be fine with him going to play for Valencia. I don't know that I have a strong preference here. In these cases, I kind of always tend to want to play it safe. And as the U.S. heads into the World Cup. So I think there could be some fun aspects of his season at Lille. I also am certainly enticed by the idea of Musa and Weah playing together. Graham, where do you fall on this? Do you think that staying or going is better for Weah in this case?
I'm split on this because I think the concerning thing for Weah at Lille is that Jonathan David has been playing on the right side for them in their first two games. And obviously Weah's got an injury at the moment. But the other factor, the other thing to consider is that Lille have brought in a new striker in the summer. Mohamed Bayo has come in there. Fonseca seems to like David coming in off the right side, and with good reason. His record in those first two games for this season is pretty incredible. I think he's got two goals and three assists in two games from that right side. So maybe it's difficult for Weah to reclaim that place when David is playing so well. With Valencia, I think in terms of the profile of their team under Gattuso, it'd be a good fit for Timothy Weah. But the issue for them is that they see him as the replacement for Gonzalo Guedes, who's recently signed for Wolves, and he was playing on the left side, which obviously Weah can play there. But for the USMNT, he predominantly plays on the right, so he could be playing a different position for club than country, because Valencia have also just signed Samu Castillejo to play on the right side as well. So it seems like Castillejo would be the first choice on the right, Weah on the left. That could work. I think that could be pretty good. But as I say, there's a difference there between what he'd be doing for Valencia and what he'd be doing for the USMNT.
The other issue with him going to Valencia is that for all the positive things you all have said about Gennaro Gattuso, I think the longest managerial gig he has had so far is two seasons. And that's he has been employed for two seasons. I think he usually gets sacked midway through that second season. And before that, it was one and done. So I don't know if that would be the most like stable situation for Weah at Valencia. I can see why it would be nice. I can see why it would be really good to get to watch him and Musa. It does make our work a little bit easier, Joe. But I also would worry about it being sort of too much uncertainty too quickly. We don't know his health yet. We don't know how physically fit he is. We don't know what form he would be in. Then it would be moving to a new team where there's going to be pressure, where there could be a volatile manager. I feel like there's a lot of not quite red flags, but like orange flags that would make me nervous for that one. So I think Weah is one where I'm more comfortable with him staying at least until January, let's say.
I I watch a lot more La Liga than I do of Ligue 1.
Oh,
so
yeah?
I don't know if you've heard, but this is all these moves are about me. So I would quite like to see him at Valencia so I can watch him more.
Should we just move everyone to Liverpool and Manchester United and then we can just watch those two teams, one of them implode and one of them be good?
That's the efficient thing to do.
Yeah, makes sense.
I don't know which one of them needs Ricardo Pepi, but let's talk about him for a moment. It does not seem to be going well at Augsburg, and I will hold my hands up and say this is a move that, well, I guess initially I was nervous about, because anytime you have a player making that jump to the Bundesliga, it feels like it could be a step too far, and especially when it's somebody moving there to be a starter. The money they paid, it's felt like a huge investment in a young player, but we had a lot of hype, we had a lot of enthusiasm for him. And I think talking to Manuel, for example, who said, you know, they have a smart investment strategy, they have a new owner. Or not a new owner, but a new majority investor, who like has this plan for how they're going to build. The money there is an indicator of how much they believe in him, of how much they like him. And yet, at the end of the day, they stay up, but they have not had the success with Pepi or as a club that we had hoped them to be able to have. I don't know how much he factors into their plans this season. And this, for me, has become one where I am happy with him moving pretty much anywhere if it means he gets time to play and develop and sort of shake off the rust that I'm going to assume has developed.
Yeah, I mean, I'm all about this move in particular. Pepi is not playing at Augsburg. I went back in my notes from January, and Taylor, we talked about this at the time, and Graham, we talked about this at the time. There's concern about this being another Josh Sargent at Bremen or Josh Sargent at Norwich, and that's exactly what it's turned out to be. There were always reasons for optimism here, too. Augsburg didn't really have a primary goal scorer, and so there's this idea that Pepi could come in and be that player for them, and it just hasn't worked out. I would love to see him go on loan somewhere to try and play and prove and get into some level of form and to just really continue to develop his game, because the development has stalled. And I think it's pretty clear to see right now that Pepi moved too early for everyone but Jesus Ferreira, basically, who's, I think, the biggest winner alongside with FC Dallas, who it's pretty clear to see also absolutely fleeced Augsburg in this deal. Just incredible business by FC Dallas to get $20 million for a really young and still unproven player, but potential sells. It's the idea that Pepi should go, but, I mean, do we think, fellas, that Augsburg are ready to admit that they did a bad thing? Because I think that's the visual when you send Pepi out on loan. You pay $20 million for this guy. And after less than a year, you're already saying, okay, yeah, we don't really know what to do with him. So someone else is going to have to try, and hopefully that benefits us in the long term. I think that's a really unfortunate look for Augsburg. I don't think U.S. men's national team fans would have much of any issue with that. I think they would probably appreciate that move. But I just can't see this happening because of how much they paid for him and how recently they made that move.
I could see it if you're going from the perspective of, we expected to develop this playing style to be able to play this brand of football that incorporates your skill sets and helps us sort of develop you as a player. We haven't gotten to that level, so we can't really stay at the comfort level where we can afford to invest in your development, where we can afford to kind of let you have time to grow. So we're going to send you somewhere else where they can do that. They can sort of help you develop a lower level team, whatever it may be. And then after that season where you've scored a bunch of goals, hopefully you can come back in. I could see it sort of spun that way.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, yeah, it is definitely a, nope, not good enough. Anybody want to pay us $19 million? Fingers crossed?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly don't think a sale is on the table for Augsburg, because there's no chance they're even getting close to that $20 million figure, so they're just agreeing to a loss at that point. The issue even with the loan is, I talked about it from an image standpoint, though, you also have, Taylor, this idea that Augsburg are still fighting to stay up, and they need attacking options, they need high-potential players, and Pepi hasn't performed yet, but he's undoubtedly a high-potential player. That's why they paid $20 million for him in the first place. So I think it would be a mistake on their part even to try to loan him out. Maybe better for the long term, but Augsburg are not in the position right now where they have the luxury of thinking long term. They kind of have to think in a more of immediate sense, what do we need today? What do we need tomorrow? What do we need to avoid relegation in May? I think that's the questions that Augsburg's asking themselves right now. And I don't think the answers to any of those questions involve Pepi playing at a different club.
I think it depends on what Augsburg's transfer strategy is, and I don't know enough about what they have done this summer or what they would be planning to do in the final 2 weeks. But if you're right, Joe, they maybe don't want to lose a potential goal scorer. I know Pepi hasn't been that player for them so far this year, but they might not want to lose a potential goal scorer when they are expected to be down the bottom of the Bundesliga table. But if they're able to bring someone else in to argue to fans that they are strengthening while allowing a player to leave, they could then, from a PR point of view, along the lines of what you were saying, Taylor, kind of massage it out by saying, well, you know, he's going to develop elsewhere and he's going to come back to us a better player. So we're still getting the best of both worlds, where we've got a strong squad, but he's away maybe somewhere in MLS developing and he'll come back a better player. I think that's the only way they could do it. But if I'm Pepe at this point, with the World Cup on the horizon, it feels like, obviously this is a little bit difficult to gauge because we haven't had USMNT games in a wee while, but it feels like he is quickly falling down that pecking order. Obviously, Jesus Ferreira is ahead of him now. It kind of feels like PFOC is probably ahead of him now. Certainly with every goal he scores for Union Berlin, Brandon Vazquez is doing well. Haji Wright, he scored at the weekend as well. It kind of feels like every number nine option at the moment is doing bits apart from Ricardo Pepe. So I think he is maybe at the point where if he wants to salvage his World Cup, maybe he needs to force a move out of Augsburg.
I thought things were slightly more bleak at Augsburg. Looking at their transfer activity, the only two players that they have spent actual money on have been central midfielders. They have three players who came on free transfers. One of them a center back, one of them a holding midfielder. One of them is a forward, Ermedin Demirovic from Freiburg, brought in on a free. But that doesn't feel necessarily like he is brought in to be the out-and-out starter. He may end up the starter, he may get some games, but it doesn't seem like there is... I was expecting to see three center forwards, all of whom who were over 6'1" or something like that, to kind of show us that maybe they are trying to move on. So maybe that does mean that there is a possibility for Ricardo Pepi. I still think if I were to see him linked with a loan somewhere, maybe if it's there at a Vizzy where he's going to get opportunities, it's less physical, he can score some goals, get that confidence, I wouldn't hate it. But maybe I'm alone in saying that I'm okay with him moving on. It seems like both of you are more okay with him staying put for the time being.
No, I think he should move on. I'm with you, Taylor. Okay. I just think from Augsburg's perspective, yeah, it's taken it's a fail, isn't it? An epic fail for them to lose a $20 million player 6 months after he signed, even if it is on loan. But if it's possible and if there's a deal there for Pepe, I think he should take it.
And Joe?
Yeah, agreed. I agree with everything that you guys have said.
All right, there we are. So that's 5 Americans who could move, many of whom we're not sure should move, which I think is, I guess, not the worst place to be, much rather that than, yep, that guy is never going to play, we got to get him a new move. There are some players who could probably use that, and maybe we could talk about them next week before that window closes. For now, we're going to take one more break, then we will return to talk about some Americans who actually played this past weekend. Back soon. Today's episode is brought to you by Shopify. On the Total Soccer Show, we often talk about the importance of a manager who can clearly and effectively communicate their tactics and then a squad of players capable of executing that approach, but also adding some individual flair along the way. And that's the same relationship you're getting with Shopify. You tell them how you want things to work or what you need to get done, and they execute the game plan, sometimes even better than you could have expected, with Shopify Magic, their AI-powered all-star. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real store stage, all the way to the did we just hit over a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. From what I've heard from family members who use Shopify for their online store, which has evolved into an amazing brick-and-mortar location, Shopify has helped with that growth, and with every step along the way, they've made it easier to process and track orders, run the business day-to-day, and help with long-term growth as well. So whether you're auctioning autographed jerseys or selling custom stadium prints, both of which are awesome, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% compared to other leading commerce platforms. And you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, the aforementioned AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States and is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, their extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/TSS. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/TSS now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. One more time, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/TSS.
Today's episode is brought to you by our old friends, Mack Weldon. Wouldn't it be nice if we could have things both ways, like a zero-calorie cheeseburger, internet ads in March that weren't just reminders to do your taxes, a dog that never needs walking after midnight when it's cold, a Manchester United that is consistently good instead of their current scattershot approach? Well, we tend to think of clothing as an either-or situation as well. People think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort. But it's possible to have it both ways. Mack Weldon makes timeless apparel with modern performance fabrics for guys who want to look and feel sharp without sacrificing comfort. From their light-as-air underwear to innovative anti-odor tees and versatile yet comfortable pants, Mack Weldon has a full range of clothes that never go out of style. I got a few things recently, including a long-sleeve polo, which I love, maybe the most comfortable t-shirt, which I also love, and my new favorite sweatpants, the Ace sweatpant. It's exactly what I described above, comfort and versatile, but still stylish. It's the type of sweatpant I can wear to pick up my kids from daycare and not think, I'm now wearing sweatpants in public. The other parents will judge me. Now I just think, judge away, nerds, because you will never be this comfortable unless you're also wearing a pair, in which case, high five. Mack Weldon is not flashy. It's just classic, always in style, and made from the world's most comfortable performance materials. They're designed to fit both your style and the demands of modern life. So get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code TSS. That's MackWeldon.com, promo code TSS to get 20% off your first order. Thank you to Mack Weldon for sponsoring today's episode.
Welcome back to the Total Soccer Show. We're going to talk weekend performances, and we're going to start with our Americans Abroad segment sponsored by FX's Welcome to Wrexham, which premieres August 24th on FX, and you can stream it on Hulu. This new original documentary series focuses on two very famous Americans abroad, Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney, as they take over the struggling Welsh football club Wrexham AFC, who play in the fifth tier of the English Football League system. This week, we'll focus on an American abroad who also competes in a lower league with similar dreams of promotion. So, in honor of Welcome to Wrexham on FX, we're going to be taking a look at one American who, I guess, technically has played in a lower level this weekend.
Oh,
Matthew Hoppe got 1 minute, comes on as a 97th minute sub for Middlesbrough against Sheffield United. I think we're talking about this one less from a what did he do in that minute, Joe, unless you have
thoughts. We're breaking it down.
Okay, yeah,
we're breaking it down, too. No, I didn't watch that. I didn't watch that minute.
He took
no
four
chance.
Seconds. Yeah. But more to talk about sort of this move for Matthew Hoppe. We talked about players who could use a move. This is a player who did get one, and I think we would have included in that segment of definitely needing one. So, Joe, happy to see Matthew Hoppe in greener pastures, theoretically.
Yeah, and that's the key word there, theoretically. I think it's doing a lot of heavy lifting in that sentence. I am happy to see Matthew Hoppe move. So let's take it there. I'm not really sure I'm willing to go any further than that at this point. So going from La Liga, he played 131 minutes for Mallorca last year. He played in five games. Matthew Hoppe didn't contribute to anything meaningful in La Liga. He had difficulty reportedly adapting to the language. He struggled with some different injuries, and it just sounded like generally a very difficult season for Matthew Hoppe on and off the field. So in some ways, I'm happy for him, right? Going to a culture that is not identical to what he's used to in the United States, but a place where he knows the language and will have, ideally for him off the field, an easier time bedding in is a good thing. Going down to the English Championship as a young player who struggled for minutes and has played, 148 minutes between his time at Schalke last year and then you have time at Mallorca, he has never played over 1,500 minutes in a single season. I don't know that I love Middlesbrough as a destination. I would have been much more intrigued by him coming to MLS and trying to establish himself there a la Nico Joachini, right? A la someone like Shaq Moore coming back to try to prove something and to sort of get his career back on track. Middlesbrough seems to me like a much bigger risk with Chris Wilder over in the championship than a club like Atlanta United would have been in MLS. Maybe not a ton of minutes there, but I don't love this move for Matthew Hoppe, but at the same time, I don't want to rule it out as a possibility yet. I do think it's an encouraging sign that he got on the field this past weekend, even though we're joking around about it just being 1 minute because it really was just 1 minute. Either way, I do think that's something. Otherwise, for me, it's just a little too early to tell on this one.
And that was 1 minute coming very quickly after he had signed. He had only been in training to a limited extent. Chris Wilder talked about how they were pleased with his physical fitness, that he seemed physically ready to go. Not as many comments on his technical brilliance and technical proficiency. Hopefully that comes with time. Graham, for folks who are less familiar with Chris Wilder, what can we expect for Matthew Hoppe when he's playing for Middlesbrough under Chris Wilder?
So Chris Wilder has a very distinctive style of play. We obviously saw it for two seasons in the Premier League when he was manager of Sheffield United. It's all very modern and dynamic. And I remember there was a lot of discussion about the overlapping centre-backs that he used with Sheffield United. Obviously, that doesn't really affect Matthew Hoppe much. But he likes to have attackers who can carry the ball and stretch the pitch. And obviously, that is something that Matthew Hoppe, in the limited time that we have seen him between his game time at Schalke and Mallorca, that's potentially something he can do. And at Sheffield United, Wilder used Oliver Burke in this way. And similar to Hoppe, Oliver Burke was criticised for a perceived lack of technical ability. But Wilder liked his athleticism and those sort of attributes that he had. And Burke was an important player for Sheffield United. Even if he didn't score many goals, he kind of got more out of players around him. So I think there's potential that Hoppe could perform the Burke role for Middlesbrough. But I think we need to be realistic about this. The Championship, look, it's not the Premier League, but the Championship is still a good quality of league. And he has joined one of the bigger teams in that league as well. And I think Middlesbrough are quite far along the line in their rebuild under Wilder. He's been there. He's not just coming this summer. He was in there for the second half of last season. So he is joining quite late in that rebuild. So I don't expect him to be a first team figure. And I think Wilder, in his quotes about Hoppe, even described him as a developmental player, which kind of says that they've bought him for the future rather than for right now. So I think some patience for Hoppe. If he gets more game time than he did at Mallorca last season, I would say even that would be a modest success. So it's an interesting move, and I'm interested to see how he gets on. I think he's already a fan's favourite with Middlesbrough, given that he has emulated Ravanelli with his new Graham Ruthven-esque blonde haircut.
I appreciate you calling it Graham Ruthven-esque. I also appreciate you pointing out that the development side of things, because for some reason I thought this was a loan, and to realize that it's a permanent move does make me feel better about Chris Wilder saying he's a developmental player, because if you're developing a player in a season-long loan, that one I'm not quite sure is supposed to be the goal. Ideally, they play and then they develop, as opposed to you're trying to develop them. So that does make me feel better in the long term. But Joe, it seems like for a player who broke through at Schalke, got a lot of attention for the goals, has a, to my mind, a very promising Gold Cup where he is running all over the place, working really hard, getting into sort of altercations with Berhalter and then getting custom shirts made about those kind of altercations with Berhalter. It seemed like he was going to be on the radar, going to be in the conversation. At this point, it seems like what we would prefer is maybe less emphasis for him on making Qatar, more emphasis on sort of getting back into that form, establishing himself, getting comfortable, and then either staying with Middlesbrough, and hopefully they do get that promotion goal, or moving on but continuing to develop that way.
Yeah, Matthew Hoppe is not going to go to Qatar, but I think continuing to try to find rhythm and develop is important. He still hasn't played that many minutes as a pro soccer player. So finding a spot, whether that's Middlesbrough or somewhere else, someplace else, that Hoppe can play and develop and actually have time to work on his game, that is the most important thing for me.
All right. Well, we shall see how it goes for Matthew Hoppe and Middlesbrough. If you would like to check out FX's Welcome to Wrexham, this Americans Abroad segment was sponsored by FX's Welcome to Wrexham, which premieres August 24th on FX. You can stream it on Hulu. Thank you to Welcome to Wrexham for sponsoring today's show. Graham, which American do you think would fare most poorly in the fifth tier of English football, and why is it Gio Reyna?
Yeah, that's the answer. It's Gio Reyna with his glass legs. I think they would just shatter in the lower leagues of English football, where players like him will get kicked for 90 minutes straight.
All I can picture is Joe sort of having to be restrained as Gio Reyna is loaned to a fifth-tier team just for fear of what that could do to him. That's the opposite of Carbonite, Joe.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that. I'm not a fan of that idea at all. Gio Reyna doesn't need to do anything more than walk out of his apartment before he ends up injured. So fifth-tier of England, yikes.
You wouldn't have any body parts left if Gio Reyna was in the
honestly,
fifth part of...
Honestly, I'm already down a hammy and like a few other ligaments here somewhere. I only have so much left to give, guys. I forgot about that bit, Graham.
Oh, man. Joe, the universal donor. Well, hopefully Chris Richards will not need parts, but he did get minutes, 11 minutes for Crystal Palace in the Premier League against Liverpool. Graham, did you watch all of his 11-minute debut?
I think I did.
Maybe
I had a second screen on the go at some point, but yeah, I was watching that game. I watched that full match, and I thought it was solid enough from Chris Richards. 11 minutes isn't a great. He's great at Christchurch. Yeah, that,
he's the Birmingham Alaba, and he's Christchurch.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah, the Birmingham Alaba. That's what Ryan named him. I don't know how much you can really take from 11 minutes, but he looked solid enough. And at the point of the match, he was introduced. It was largely about protection for Palace, even though they did actually have the man advantage. At Liverpool were very much dominant in that final stage of the match. But he won a few aerial duels, and he got back to help out inside the Palace penalty area when Liverpool were getting attackers forward. I'll be interested to see what he can do in an attacking sense in other matches that aren't away to Liverpool at Anfield, but a decent enough cameo for him, I thought.
Yeah, I think the attacking side of things very much in this game was Palace trying to waste every possible second. So when he did play it forward, it seemed to be balls kicked about as high as he possibly could, or if he could have kept it in bound and kept possession, it was shepherding it out of bounds for a throw-in for Crystal Palace to then kill 30 more seconds. On the defensive side, Joe, I liked seeing how aggressive he still was in the step. He was trying to make those interventions, and more importantly, I didn't see him get totally like beaten for one of those or misplay it or sort of get out of position. It seemed like he kind of backed himself to win some of those challenges, and those that he went for, he won.
Yeah, I mean, he was good. He did his job in this game. Graham was totally right about him playing a little bit wider, and I think that's something we will see from time to time. It seems like that's something that Patrick Vieira values about Chris Richards. And he came in and headed every single ball away that was in his area. He looked comfortable as well, pressing up into the final third, which was just a reminder frame for me about how mobile Chris Richards is. There's not a ton we can draw from this game in terms of his on-field performance, other than just to say that it's good he's playing. It was always pretty clear that he was going to play for Patrick Vieira, maybe not every game and maybe not starting every game, but with the money they spent on him, it was always going to be the case that Richards was going to play. But it's good to see that happen so early on in the year. It's not a ton. There's not a ton of minutes at play here, but it's a strong sign for Richards right now.
I'm going to ask some hard-hitting questions here. Graham, do you think it's good if Chris Richards plays more minutes?
Yes.
Cool. All right. Just wanted to make
sure. I think that was the right answer, right?
Yep. You got it right. 1 point for Graham. Joe, 1 point for you if you tell me that Richie Ledesma is fully fit and ready to go.
Richie Ledesma is fully fit, and he's not. I can't lie. I can't lie to you,
no
Taylor.
No points for Joe.
I'm sorry. I want my point so bad.
Two points for honesty. 2 points for honesty.
Oh, let's go.
Back in the lead.
Suck it, Graham. Anyway, let's move past that. So Richie Ledesma got injured over the weekend, 21-year-old midfielder, with ankle damage, according to PSV. So they sent out a statement earlier today that he had a scan on his ankle, and there is some sort of, I don't know if it's major or minor, but there's some sort of damage there, and that he will, quote, now face a spell on the sidelines. He was getting minutes, too, and I talked about Ledesma briefly last week. He started over the weekend in a 5-2 win for PSV. That was his third appearance in the last five games. He was playing as part of a double pivot, getting minutes so that Xavi Simons? The old PSV, he's not old, but the PSV kid?
Yeah. I have no idea. I've written his name so many times, I don't think I've ever said it before. It's a little bit like Victor Osimhen, which I used to write so many times in articles and had never said it until last season.
Graham.
So I'm afraid I don't really have an answer, Joe. Sorry.
Sorry, Joe. I'm going to further distract us for a moment to say, I have thought about you not being able to pronounce that name for so long because I was like, it's not that big of a deal. And then I realized it's not that big of a deal because I was mispronouncing it every single time. I have now gone with Osimhen. And I think that's what it is, Osimhen. I had it flipped the H before the M. I think the M is after the H is after the M. So Osimhen is what I'm going with. Joe, back to you for Simon Simmons.
No, I like this whole combo a lot more than the Ledesma injury conversation.
Yeah,
I mean, long story short, Simmons is playing. Simons is playing as the number 10, and so we got to see Ledesma in a deeper role, and that was fun. He didn't do a ton of crazy stuff in his 30 minutes, but he was progressing play, connecting passes, had some more ambitious moves, and it comes on this dribble out of PSV's own half that it gets tackled from behind. And now we just don't really know when Ledesma's coming back. He said brutal luck with injuries before. Hopefully this is a weeks or days rather than month situation. I don't know that we know enough to be optimistic about this at the moment, though.
Final player to be discussed this week, excuse me, Malik Tillman, a player that when last we spoke, we were both, Graham and I were excited about. We wanted him on that plane.
Hey,
Joe,
I'm excited
said, no,
about. No,
I want
no, no,
to
no,
do
no.
With him. He's
Joe
overrated.
Hates Malik Tillman. You heard it here.
I'm getting it here and I'm getting it on Twitter. Multiple people have tagged me, and it's all
serious?
Good natured stuff. But I've gotten a couple Malik Tillman tweets. And also, Felipe Cardenas put out some tweet about how Tillman should be on the plane to Qatar, and I said whoa now in the response, and I think there's a lot of folks, Felipe maybe in that group along with you guys at this point, who knows, that think Tillman should be going to Qatar. I would just say pump the brakes. Yeah. Scotland, never mind. Just
say
pump
it,
the brakes.
Say it, Joe. Say it. Twist the knife. Twist
Scotland,
the knife.
Scotland is not, after three good games playing for Rangers, the level that they play against is not enough to say, oh, wow, this is a game-changing talent. I think Tillman is a talented kid, and I think he's doing very well right now at Rangers, but it's just way too early for this stuff, guys.
So I still think we're some way off Tillman being on that plane to Qatar, but he has
put it on
been
my tombstone.
Here's the pro, right? Here's my argument for Malik Tillman. He has been excellent. He's not just been good. He's not just been, he's played some good games. He's pretty much been the man of the match in every game that Rangers have played. And I accept your point, Joe, with the standard of Scottish football. The team that Rangers played at the weekend, St Johnstone, they're a bad team, right? I will be honest, when Taylor asked me last week about Kilmarnock, I said they can be well organised, they've got a good manager. I can't really say any of those things about St Johnstone. But the thing about Tillman is last week he scored that winning goal in the Champions League qualification against Union. That was a huge goal for Rangers, and it wasn't just that goal. He was brilliant throughout that game. I really wish we would stop recording these shows on Tuesdays because they tend to fall on days where Rangers have big Champions League games. Tonight, on the day that we're recording, they're playing PSV. And obviously that is a big test. That's the biggest test Tillman will have had as a Rangers player and possibly of his whole career. That's the biggest test of his career so far. I haven't seen the team lineups yet. I would expect he is in that starting lineup, but that is one I'll be keeping an eye on. And if he consistently performs at this level, if he's able to keep this up against teams like PSV and Rangers, no matter what happens now, they'll be going into the Europa League group stages. So even if they don't qualify for the Champions League and he's in the Europa League and he keeps this up, that's when you start to have a discussion about whether he should be on that plane or not, I think.
Agreed.
Graham, quick follow-up question for me. Are you just going to let Joe do Scotland like that?
Well, I mean, I was trying to think of Scottish players who have been successful in MLS
Johnny
and
Russell.
Who have not really been that good. Isn't Patrick Klamala good in MLS?
Jury's out, Graham. Jury's out.
Right. Well,
bit.
I mean, the jury was very much in when he was in Scotland, and the verdict was bad, very bad. So,
Graham,
I don't know what that says about MLS.
Graham says Scotland not as good as USA. Just writing that one down. Wanted to make sure we had that on the record. But I am... very optimistic for Malik Tillman. I am not yet he's on that plane, because right now the depth and talent the United States has is so strong, and I think him not playing as a like out-and-out number nine for me, playing a couple different spots, a couple different roles, means that there are other options elsewhere. We'll have to see how the rest of the season goes, but I would assume we will continue to talk about Malik Tillman between now and when those U.S. rosters drop. But I think he is making a strong case in a way that he would not have had he have stayed at Bayern Munich or maybe stayed in the Bundesliga. So credit to him for making that jump. Credit to any of the other players who make jumps before that window closes. We will be back next week to talk about more Americans who did things this coming weekend, as well as any moves that might happen and the like. But for now, Graham Ruthven, thank you for putting up with my nonsense and for talking about Americans today.
Thank you, Taylor Rockwell.
Joe Lowry, the same thing, but to you.
Right back at you, Taylor.
Listeners, thanks so much for joining us. We'll talk to y'all very soon.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.